WABC, New York.
You'll never mind a rainy day, a sky of gray way up above. Whoa, 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 laugh.
The 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast present the mayor of Texaco Town, Eddie Cantor.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello, everybody. Hello, Jimmy. Jimmy, I want you to know that our new company, the PU Pictures, is coming along fine.
Say, Eddie, let's postpone our picture company until next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday? Why? What for?
Well, because tonight we're celebrating your 25th anniversary before the public. And I want to be the first to congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You know, Eddie, the telegrams haven't stopped coming in. Did you see this one from the White House?
From the White House?
Yeah.
Let me read it. It says, congratulations. After seeing and hearing you for years, you deserve to be here where I am. And it's signed Joe Burns, White House janitor.
I guess that means it's time for you to retire.
Retire? Say, look at Henry Ford. He's much older than I am, and he's not thinking of quitting.
Well, I'd like to see you make as good an automobile as Henry Ford.
I'd like to see Henry clap his hands, roll his eyes, and sing, Ma, he's making eyes at me.
Listen here. After all, you're not comparing yourself to Mr. Ford.
No, but I have my admirers, too. Look at this beautiful silver humidor I got from Deanna, huh?
Hey, that is lovely. And, Eddie, I was saving this as a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, the boys in the orchestra have asked me to present you with this gorgeous silver service.
Silver? Thanks. It's really very nice. It's very beautiful.
Wait a minute, Eddie, is that all? Aren't you surprised?
Jimmy, how can I be surprised? They bought it at my antique shop. I know what we paid for it. I know what we stole it for. We made very little profit considering the overhead. Honest, I'm telling you. It cost me more. Believe me, I didn't pick it up. I'm telling you, Jimmy. Come, we have an ashtray for $2, so help me. I'm telling you.
Listen, Eddie, after all, this being your 25th anniversary, why don't you tell us some of the highlights of your career?
Would you like that?
I think it'll be fine.
Supposing we start with the East Side of New York. It's Miner's Bowery Theater, Amateur Night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next amateur is Edward Cantor. He says he's an impersonator.
Give him a hug!
Ladies and gentlemen, my first impersonation will be that of the big... Oh, give me a chance. Will you give me a chance? I'll make good. Look, my first impersonation will be that of that well-known star, Harry Thompson, the mayor of the Bowery. The scene, Essex Market Court, and I play all the characters myself.
The first case on the docket is Spike Hudson. Officer, what is he charged with?
Your Honor, he was caught picking pockets.
Pickpocket, eh? Well, we'll make short work of him.
$10 fine.
Your Honor, he says he only has $7 on him. Well, turn him loose in the crowd till he gets the other three.
Next case, Jay Smitty. You're charged here by Officer Sullivan with breaking into a lady's dress shop and stealing a silk petticoat. Smitty, you make it a habit of going around stealing petticoats?
No, Judge, that was my first slip.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. When you were stealing that petticoat, why didn't you think of your mother?
I did, Your Honor. That's why I took size 42.
Oh, he loves his mother. Well, it's too bad, because you're going to miss your mother for the next 30 days. Take him away. Next case, Mamie Jessup. You're charged here with disorderly conduct, assault and battery, and resisting arrest. You beat up two policemen, took away another cop's club, stole one officer's badge, and finally tossed the sergeant over a horse car. Well, Mamie, speak up. What about it?
Your Honor, I couldn't help myself. I did it in a moment of weakness. I'll tell you how it happened. I went to Coney Island with my boyfriend. We sat in a beer garden and had 15 schooners of beer.
After the fourth schooner, why didn't you order sarsaparilla?
After the fourth schooner, I couldn't say sarsaparilla. Oh, Judge, you should have seen me. When I got home, I picked up a hairbrush instead of a hand mirror, took one look and says to myself, for heaven's sake, do I need a shave?
Fine, $5. Court's adjourned.
You know, Eddie?
Yep.
Eddie, I imagine you made good on that amateur night.
Jimmy, I was lucky. I took the prize of $5 and asked the Belle of Henry Street to help me spend it. We went to the New Amsterdam Theater and saw the biggest hit in town, The Merry Widow.
Hey, I'll bet you were proud.
Proud? Oh, you should have seen me in the balcony holding Ida's two hands.
Two hands? Both of them?
Yeah. You see, I had $1.70 left and she was sitting next to my money pocket. You see, Jimmy, I didn't know Ida well enough then.
Well, I guess you know her better now.
Yes, now she can go through my pockets anytime. I hide my money under the carpet.
Oh, The Merry Widow. I remember that famous waltz.
I can describe the thrill I got in hearing the leading lady sing it. She had a face like an angel and a voice like, well, like Deanna Durbin.
That when the past generation was dancing to the Merry Widow waltz, the Texaco was bringing motoring pleasure to the American public. Today, there are extra motoring values awaiting you at the sign of the red Texaco star. In addition to high-quality products, there is a new systematic plan of keeping your car ready and fit for the road. Texaco dealers call this new method circle service. When you drive up to a Texaco pump, the dealer circles your car. He checks the oil and the water in the radiator. He cleans the windshield and rear window, stoplight and headlight lenses, and inspects the condition of your tires for safe driving. That's circle service. Another reason why millions of motorists are driving in at the sign of the Texaco Red Star is to get Fire Chief gasoline. Fire Chief is the only gasoline refined differently for each of the 24 different United States weather areas. It matches your local climate in any season. Fire Chief starts in 10 turns of the engine, even in coldest weather. On short trips, it saves you up to 30% on gasoline. And yet, Fire Chief sells everywhere at no added cost. So next time, try a Texaco dealer.
Jimmy, and that night, with the Merry Widow waltz still ringing in our ears, I proposed to Ida.
Boy, I wish I could have heard you.
If you did, you'd have had a good laugh. We sat on the steps of her house on Henry Street. I didn't beat about the bush. I grabbed Ida's hand and said with all the fervor of an East Side Casanova, I said, Ida, you are the only girl of all the girls of this neighborhood who are the girl that I love, if you don't mind.
Why, Eddie, that's marvelous. What did she say?
Jimmy, she hesitated. I tried to swallow my Adam's apple, took a deep breath, and said, I certainly would appreciate it if you please, and I must have your answer at once because I have many offers. Well, sir, she told me to ask her father, and the next day I did.
Uh-oh. Come in, come in.
Mr. Tobias, I came here to see you. My name is Izzy, huh? Eddie Cantor.
Oh, I know you, I know you. I watched you play ball on the street and sing at the school and make funny faces.
Yes, Mr. Tobias, I just won first prize at Miner's Barry. I'm in the theatrical business.
You're a bum, you're a loafer.
No, I'm an actor.
What's the difference?
Oh, but I love your daughter, Ida, and I think she likes me. We want to become engaged.
To an actor, that's no business. Now, if you had a little store like Gents Furnishing, that's a clean business. Collars and ties and socks.
But, Mr. Tobias, I'm ambitious, and I love the theatrical business. Someday you'll see my name in electric lights in front of a theater.
You'll never marry my Ida until I see your name in front of a Gents Furnishing store. Good night.
Eddie, you made up your mind to marry Ida, and her father made up his mind that he'd never have an actor in the family.
That's right.
And you both got your wish.
Yep, quiet, Jimmy. Next came Coney Island. I was a singing waiter.
What's that?
I served drinks to the customers and sang. The more I sang, the more they drank. And we had a piano player that we called Ragtime Jimmy, a quiet sort of a guy who never opened his mouth, but how he could play the piano. And his full name was Jimmy Durante.
Well. But tell me, stuck away in a little cafe in Coney Island, you certainly were a long ways from Broadway then.
No, James. Broadway used to come down to see us. George M. Cohen, Irving Berlin, Diamond Jim Brady.
Diamond Jim Brady? Say, how old are you?
Jimmy, this is an anniversary program, not true confession. One night, Diamond Jim Brady gave me a dollar tip, a big silver dollar. I was so happy, I gave it to a little baby girl who was parked in a go-kart outside our place.
Yes, I know. She told me.
Wait a minute. The baby girl told you?
Why, yes, because that little baby girl grew up to be Sophie Tucker.
Oh, get away. Go away. I'm not that old. Go away.
Oh, Eddie, in the good old days, the goal of every actor was Broadway. Tell me, how did you hit the big street?
Jimmy, I knocked around in vaudeville for quite a few years, and my agent, Max Hart, sent me up to see the outstanding theatrical figure of our generation, the glorifier of the American girl, the great Ziegfeld.
And were you scared?
Scared? No. I was just petrified. That's all. Just petrified. But I knew this was my one chance. My one chance. I knew I had to be a high-pressure salesman. I took a deep breath and knocked on the door.
Come in.
Hello. I'm Eddie Cantor.
What did you say your name was?
Oh, it makes no difference, Mr. Ziegfeld. It's the talent that counts. I came to put new life into your show, The Midnight Frolics.
New life? Why, in my show, I have W.C. Fields, Fanny Bryce, Burt Williams. If you ever get in, that's opposition.
Listen, when they get to know I'm a regular fellow besides my terrific talent, then they'll learn to like me and they won't mind the opposition.
Well, you certainly have enough nerve. By the way, what do you do?
Mr. Ziegfeld, do I ask what you do?
Why, I produce the frolics. I produce the follies.
Till you hire me, you ain't started yet.
Well, young man, don't you think you're a little conceited?
Conceited? Say, as it happens, I'm a little bit bashful because I'm frightened. But once this fright wears off, you'll hear some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, look here, my boy. I've got plenty of big stars. They get a lot of money.
I'm not worried about money. What's money? With me, everything is art. What are you going to pay me?
Well, we'll arrange that after I've watched you rehearse tomorrow. If you look good, you go on Thursday night.
Gee, thanks, Mr. Ziegfeld. I appreciate it. I'll run along now.
Oh, all right. Goodbye, young man.
What
is it, son?
I was just wondering, could you let me have a little money in advance?
Well, I don't know. You see, it's rather unusual.
Look, all I want is a nickel to get back to the Bronx. I walk all the way down.
Oh, here. You better take $5.
$5?
Yes. A fellow with your ideas is liable to wind up taking a taxi cab.
Yep. Well, Eddie, there's no use asking you if you made good at that rehearsal. But your first opening night, tell us about that.
Jimmy, I'll never forget it. The audience must have been in a good mood. Everyone was a hit, even I. All my friends came to see me. Of course, Ida's father was late. He was stuck in the traffic.
Stuck?
Yeah, so you try getting a pushcart through Times Square.
Say, what show was that?
Jimmy, that was the Ziegfeld Follies of 1917. Then the Follies of 1918 and 1919.
Ziegfeld had a Follies every year?
Yes, every year he had a Follies and Ida had a girl. Yeah, we both glorified the American girl.
You know, Eddie, after all these years, I'll bet that if I'd have presented you with a ball, you'd be so happy you'd pass out cigars.
Pass out cigars? I'd pass out myself.
What were some of the other shows you did for Mr. Ziegfeld?
Well, in 1923, he starred me in Kid Boots. The show lasted until 1926. One night at the Selwyn Theater, I received a phone call asking me to appear at a party on Long Island. It was given by Rodman Wanamaker. His guest of honor had asked for me.
His guest of honor?
Yes. The Prince of Wales, later the King of England, and now the Duke of Windsor.
Well, well, well. Eddie, you know, that was practically a command performance.
Yeah. Yes, Jimmy. My father-in-law wanted me to open a Jen's furniture. So.
Say, I'm curious. What happened at the party given for the prince?
Jimmy, accompanied by George Olson's band, I sang like I never sang before.
Oh, you sang on key.
Quiet, quiet. No fooling. His Royal Highness was a great audience. I sang song after song, told him stories. Of course, I had to explain the points, because prince or no prince, he was still English, you know. And when I left at 5 o'clock in the morning, General Trotter, his official aide, thanked me and said, he said that if I ever came to England, to be sure and visit His Royal Highness. And I said, thank you, sir. I'm coming over next summer. Maybe I'll live at the palace with the prince. Oh, I said, I'll go out for my meals. There's no use waking his mother up to make breakfast for me.
Well, Eddie, that must have been some evening for you.
It was. I can always remember the slim figure of the Prince of Wales dancing to George Olson's music. The one song he kept requesting all evening long was Who? From Sonny.
That was 1926, eh? What happened in 1927?
In that year, I played my last Ziegfeld Follies, and inasmuch as I had just started to learn to live, I thought it would be nice to write the story of my life because everybody wanted it.
The story?
No, my life. But seriously, James, I got a great thrill when my old friend, Will Rogers, promised to write the introduction to the book, My Life Is in Your Hands. I had sent him a copy of it, and I went to see him at the Hotel Astor in New York. Say, Bill, I bet you haven't read the book yet now, have you?
Well, I ain't going to read it, Eddie. In fact, that's an understanding we'll have. I'm not to read your book, and that'll be the pay I'm getting for writing the introduction.
Bill, tell me, why don't you want to read this book about my life?
Well, because I don't believe it.
Wait, you don't believe it?
No, sir, people are like a cat when it comes to writing their lives. They have at least 9, and they pick out the one they think will look best.
All right, Bill. All right. I know you. You'll read it. And look, will you watch your grammar a little when you write that stuff?
Oh, grammar ain't important. It ain't lots of people that ain't saying ain't eating.
Mister, you got a philosophy all your own.
Say, what would you let me read some of the introduction I wrote?
Why, have you got it here?
Right here. Let me read some of it.
Go ahead.
I believe that if this feller Cantor hadn't got over so big on the stage, I still would have had the same regard for him. For it was what happened off the stage that I always liked about him as much as his wonderful entertainment. For instance, the proceeds of this here book all goes to a boys' summer camp that Eddie is interested in and works for and looks after. It's for poor kids on the east side that never saw a stretch of country in their lives. So I advise you all to buy this book. Or you will be helping some poor kid to get poison ivy that never in the world would have had the opportunity otherwise.
Eddie, you thought a lot of him, didn't you?
You know anybody who didn't? In times like these, couldn't a line from Bill Rogers cheer you up? What fun he would have had with the stock market today.
The stock market, Eddie? Don't tell me you're in it again.
No, just around the edges, Jimmy. Not much. Come on.
Say, tell us what happened to you in 1929.
What, again?
Sure.
Well, sir, in 1929, I was playing Whoopi with Ziegfeld, and Wall Street started making Whoopi with Cantor. Oh.
You were in the market.
In it. I was under it, Jimmy. I was under it.
Say, all the stocks went down, didn't they?
Jimmy, the only thing that stood up was my hair. Talk about panic. People were doing away with themselves. One night I walked into the Biltmore Hotel and asked for a room on the 19th floor, and the clerk said, for sleeping or jumping?
Was it that bad?
Bad? Why, two fellas jumped off a bridge together because they had a joint account.
Oh, Eddie, that's really funny. That ought to be in a book.
It is. The book is called Caught Short. I wrote it right in the middle of the crash, right after I lost everything.
Oh, no, you didn't lose everything. They didn't take away your sense of humor.
They couldn't. That's the only thing I didn't have on margin.
You know, Eddie, it must make you pretty happy to know that for 25 years you've made millions of people laugh.
If that's true, Jimmy, it's awfully nice. But I would like people to remember me also by some of the serious moments, like drive slowly, we love our children.
Well, at that, you've been able to say a lot of things in such a way that people won't forget.
Hey, what was it
that you said about policemen and firemen?
Let's see. Oh, yes. The old saying is, greater love hath no man than this, that he give his life to save a friend. Firemen and policemen do even more. Sometimes they give their lives to save a stranger.
Tell me, Eddie, what makes you discuss these serious subjects?
Jimmy, that's just my way of saying thanks.
Thanks?
Yes, I must have told you lots of times about my grandmother, how she was both mother and father to me. Jimmy, she wasn't famous. Nobody ever heard of her. But to me, she'll always be the greatest woman that ever lived. I told you how she slaved, peddled from door to door, so that I would have enough to eat. She taught me that each of us must leave the world just a little better than he found it. And the things she taught me, why, some of them I've even used on the radio.
Like what you said about gossip.
Yes, Jimmy. She never went to college, never studied psychology, but she knew people. And she said, God gave us two eyes and two ears, but only one mouth, so we could see and hear twice before we speak once.
That. That's mighty good advice, Eddie.
You know, Jimmy, my grandmother died just before I could repay her for what she had done for me. And sometimes I feel that somewheres, if she's listening in and knows what I'm trying to do, then, well, then maybe I've made her a little happier, too.
You know, Eddie, you certainly deserve that testimonial dinner that they're giving you at the Ambassador tomorrow night.
Oh, that's funny.
What's funny, Eddie?
I was just thinking how I could have used that dinner 25 years ago.
Hey, look, Eddie, there's a gentleman coming up from the audience to see you.
To see me? Oh, it's my father-in-law. Hello, Pop. Tell me, have you been listening to the program
tonight? Yes, yes, and I enjoyed myself, as I always do.
Well, who are you sitting with, Pop? I didn't see.
A friend of mine. You know, the real estate man, Mr. Jason.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he has a grand piece of property right here on Hollywood and Vine.
But, Dad, that's no place for a home.
No, but what a wonderful location for a gent's furnishing
store. Pop, after all these years, huh?
Say, Eddie,
yeah.
May I suggest a grand finish for this program?
What?
A cavalcade of some of the songs you introduced and popularized in the past quarter of a century.
Okay, okay. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to ask the audience here in the studio not to applaud the titles of the songs. It will give the listeners in the homes a better chance to hear them. If you please, Jack.
Hear them shuffling along. Hear that music and song. It's simply great, mate. Waiting on the levee, waiting for the Robert E. Lee. Everything is peaches down in Georgia. What a wonderful time. In a wonderful climb. My little Margie. I'm always thinking of you, Margie. I'll tell the world she's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat. That's the kind of a baby for me. She's not so good in a crowd, but when you get her alone, you'd be surprised. Oh, gee, oh, gosh, oh, golly, I'm in love. Oh, gee, oh, gosh, it's you I'm thinking of. I love the ladies, I love the ladies. I love to be amongst the girls. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, oh, what a girl. Ain't she sweet? See her coming down the street. Now I ask you very confidentially, ain't We have no bananas. We have no bananas today. Potatoes are cheaper. Tomatoes are cheaper. Now's the time to fall in love. How you gonna keep them down on the farm after they've seen Harry? You better watch out. You better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. She may be weary, women do get weary, wearing that same shabby dress. And when she's weary, try a little tenderness. Did you ever see a dream walking? Well, I did. They took the moonlight out of the skies and put the moonlight right into your eyes. Like an angel, you're a heavenly thing. China, if she wanted to China, and I'd hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee. Boo-hoo, you've got me crying for you. And as I sit here and sigh, says I can't believe it's true. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. When I'm the president, when I'm the president, the parents will eat the spinach. When I'm the president,
we want canter, we want canter.
And when I play my final show, I want you folks out there to know my only treasure has been the pleasure of making whoopee.
Eddie, here's another surprise for you. Martin Lewis, associate editor of Radio Guide, to see you.
How do you do? How do you do, Mr. Lewis?
Eddie Cantor, you have made the stage your own. You have made the screen your own. And you have triumphed in radio. Rewards in great number have come to you for your splendid work. Now tonight, it is my privilege to present to you, with the best wishes of every radio listener in America, Radio Guide's Medal of Merit. It is my earnest wish that you will be entertaining us for many years to come.
Thank you very much.
I love to spend each Wednesday with you. As friend to friend, I'm sorry it's true. I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way too. Let's make a date for next Wednesday night. I hope you've enjoyed the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, and good night, and thank you so much.
Tune in again next Wednesday for another Texaco Town broadcast starring His Honor the Mayor, Eddie Cantor. And in the meanwhile, don't forget to contribute to your community chest. Be a good neighbor is not just a slogan. It is your duty. So give and be thankful you're on the giving instead of the receiving end. James Wallington speaking from Hollywood, California. A pretty girl is like a melody used on his programs from the Ziegfeld Follies in 1919. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
P.M. BULOVA Bulova Watch Time. WABC,
New York.